What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, also covering the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's a round two edition of Canucks Talk here. We wrapped up round one on Friday.
And you wouldn't say it's like a round one to round two intermission episode of Canucks Talk?
I think we're in round two now. It's a transitional episode.
Round two has begun.
Yes.
Elsewhere.
Yes.
It just won't begin.
It began before round one finished.
That's true. Narrowly. I have no problem with that, by the way.
I don't have an issue with it. Now, I mean, we can get into the schedule. It's, what, 3 days after round two begins officially that the Canucks are going to get playing, so it's a little bit of a lag. I get it. There's building availability and all that going into it, so whatever. But
I don't think it has any impact.
I mean, especially because it's not the same conference, right? So, like, in the Western Conference, they start Tuesday.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's not a big difference at all.
No, and the Canucks were able to kill the series on Friday night in Nashville.
Yeah.
So it's not like they played Game 7. Like, if they'd won last night to advance, you see what I'm saying? If Suter hadn't scored and the Preds had made one more shot and they'd had to play a Game 7 and win that, then the extra day would be like, wow, what a break.
Uh-huh.
What a huge... And now it's just like, okay, well, the Oilers have been off for 6 days and the Canucks for five. They're both going to be... That's like enough time for everybody to lick
their wounds. Everyone's well-rested. I don't think it plays into it at all. But yeah, this is a transitional show. Or at least a transitional segment. Looking back, briefly at least, on what transpired in the National Series. And then looking ahead to Wednesday. And a big, like, first time since 1992. It's a long time for two Western Canadian rivals to not play each other in the playoffs.
And that's the Esa-Tikkanen series,
yes.
Right? Is that right? Where Esa-Tikkanen frustrates Bure?
Yeah. Bure, I was looking at the stats today, one goal in six games.
Right.
2 points.
And he'd started slow. Do you have the game logs literally up?
I just have the series log. Go through the game logs.
No, because it was the earlier series. He also had, like, nothing in the first, like, three games. And people were doing the whole, like, Bure can't win.
Let's trade
the
playoffs. This guy.
Flaky guy from behind the Iron Curtain can't do it. Doesn't know how much the Stanley Cup matters. Just wants to win Olympic gold. All those old saws that they used to throw at the Russians and the European-born players. And then Bure, like, had, like, 13 points. The rest of the series just took it over and crushed the Jets. Anyway, so 92, that's crazy, eh?
Yeah.
But it's because somehow these teams have never managed to be good at the same time. Like, the Oilers had that late 90s run where the league wasn't capped and they were owned by like 14 different guys.
Uh-huh.
Remember locally, like the team barely stuck around, and then they like punched above their weight, but constantly had, you know, your Jason Arnott class guys that like had to move. They were kind of like, you know, like what the Nashville Predators were, where they just like shed their good players to Philly on an every 3 or 4 year cycle pre-cap. And then the Canucks got good West Coast Express era, and the Oilers had a lost decade. And then the Oilers have been good the last 5 years, and the Canucks had sort of something of a lost decade of their own. So it makes sense that they haven't bumped into each other. It's like across 25 years, these teams have never managed to consistently be good at the same time. And now maybe they're.
And now maybe they are, and we get to see it for the first time in a long time, the Canucks and the Oilers. Let's get into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, May 6th. We'll start with the headline. Sorry, I think you had more sweet banter off the top of the show.
No.
I cut you off.
No, I mean, like, part of this, you know, and I'll throw it in the headlines. Like, part of this is the show. I mean, Connor McDavid is the single most impactful individual performer I have ever seen. You know, and I'm not saying he's the best of all time, or like, obviously Crosby's accomplished more and on and on. Like, there's a ways to go in terms of defining his actual legacy. But I mean, we were just talking about Bure. Imagine if Bure played center, was larger, good defensively, because Bure wasn't that good defensively, and did Bure stuff in a league where no one smoked and everyone was 30 to 40% faster. I mean, that's what McDavid is. It's and he's playing in the playoffs against the Vancouver Canucks on Wednesday and Friday nights in this city. Like, at the end of the day, headline one, like, the show is coming. Mm-hmm. The circus is coming. It's going to be fun. Like, this is amazing. This is hockey in mid-May against a transcendent superstar in Vancouver.
Only two Canadian teams left, right? Yeah. So this is...
Doesn't move me.
This is, No. But in terms of, like, all eyes on this series, in this country, on this side of the border, right? Like, there's no distraction. This is it. This is the focus.
I mean, maybe west of the prairies, but all eyes in the East Coast are going to be on press conferences over the course of the next 2 weeks.
Well, at least today.
Don't kid yourself. Toronto, they're not big hockey fans.
But
they'll tune in a little bit.
No. This is like, it's a big deal. They're the last two Canadian teams going up against each other with the star power of Connor McDavid.
I mean, I appreciate you being a good company man, but make no mistake, it's going to be like SportsCenter. You know what I mean? Or like Connected or whatever. You know, mm-hmm. whatever sports highlight show is on at 11 o'clock, and it's going to be like 25 minutes on Leafs hire Craig Berube, and then it's going to be like, and the Canucks beat the Oilers 4-3 in a memorable game. Yeah,
stop. 100%. Stop.
100%. Hey, you have
to go. It's Connor McDavid.
You have to go where the audience has interest. And in Ontario, it's all about the Leafs, baby. They're not hockey fans.
Oh, boy.
They're Leafs fans.
We won't get into the Leafs just yet. Maybe later on in the show, but what a weekend for the city of Toronto. tough times for the city of Toronto this weekend. Okay, headlines, of course.
Isn't it funny that the rap duel, by the way, actually mirrored the game? It was like the Nylander goal was Family Matters, and then the Bruins like very quickly punched back with Meet the Grams.
They had it ready to go.
Meet the Grams a minute later. It like legitimately the Leafs got drained.
And then the OT was not like us. All right, there we go. The breakdown we didn't know we needed.
Yep.
Okay, the headline. Canucks beat the Preds in 6 games thanks to a 1-0 win on Friday. We don't have to spend a lot of time lingering on this. Obviously, it's a couple of days old now. We're starting to look ahead to the Edmonton series. But, you know, worth just taking a moment to kind of mark the fact that they pulled that off. They won that series. They didn't have to play a game 7. It wasn't a no more of that game, as you described it, wanting to see on Friday, right? It was exactly what we've seen in this series. Super tight, not a lot of chances, came down to one play in the final minutes, but Pew Suter finally converting after a bunches of chances in the game, in the series. And then how about Artur Shelov with the shutout? And
yeah,
Tyler Myers with the desperation block late, putting his body on the line. And Ian Cole, by the way, coming in and punching that puck out of danger, too, after Myers blocked it.
And Tyler Myers has a very deep set voice, right? He's very, you know, he's halfway to Mutombo in terms of the voice. And I wonder if that wasn't quite the case.
Went up an octave or two.
At least in the waning moments. Good for Myers, man.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome.
That was an awesome play.
And the Canucks defense in general, like, held and made a really big impact in that series, I thought. Zadorov... Honestly, I thought Ian Cole, as that game 6 went on, obviously we know he's not like moving the puck dynamically with his feet or anything, but his patience making breakout passes is so high end. So high end. Like sort of shades of a lesser version of like Nick Hague. It's like Ian Cole's quietly a really good puck mover.
Mm-hmm.
You just never think about him that way. But he's just so sharp. And he's got so many good fakes and, like, doesn't look at his passes all the time, like, looks guys off. Like, he was so composed. And it felt like between him, Zadorov, Myers, like, Vancouver just didn't get stuck. The Predators forecheck just didn't play in that game. And as it sort of went on, you had this feeling that Nashville, with their sort of disciplined playing the puck into space and making these pretty area passes and their nice buildups. You know, for all of that, they didn't have a wrecking ball. They weren't mm-hmm. able to like demolish what the Canucks were trying to do. And the Canucks just like are arsonists. They were way better at breaking down Nashville than the Preds were.
I think if you look at the series, the difference was Nashville had more defensive zone breakdowns than the Canucks, right? Like, you look in key moments, the Pew Suter one, he's all alone in front of goal.
Game four.
Elias Lindholm, he's all alone in front of goal in overtime, right? And the 6-on-5 ones, look, at 6-on-5, so you give him a little bit more of a pass, but still.
No, but you still had Nyquist, and you still had, like, Yossi and O'Reilly and, like, three guys outnumbering Saros down low. You still had some things.
It wasn't defensive execution that you wanted to see from Nashville in that moment, and that's ultimately what it came down to, right? Then Rick Tocchet said that yesterday. Look, our defense held up. Those four guys in particular, who he's obviously really high on, they didn't have those big moment breakdowns in the same way that the Predators.
Well, when they did, the Predators couldn't finish.
Yeah, that's true. The other thing with Ian Cole is he's so good at doing those, like, little plays, not even like outlet passes, but just little smart plays. Whether it's banking the puck off the walls to himself or a teammate, or just the little touch,
all of a sudden
he has, him or a teammate has way more time than they did just a second ago.
Yeah.
It's not flashy, but he just thinks the game at such a high level, and he puts himself in a position then to make the good outlet pass.
They had a lot of contributors sort of play along those lines, and yet, you know, and we'll get into Canucks Oilers and setting that up more, but as the Oilers emerge as by far the most favored team in the betting markets, like by far, among the second round matchups, right? Like, they're -270, Boston's -210.
Florida, surely.
What did I say? Florida,
Boston, yeah.
Over Boston. That's not even in the same stratosphere, right? Like, at the end of the day, we're talking about, you know, a 70% favorite versus like a 60% favorite, like a 10% implied probability swing, massive. And I do think part of the reason is, yes, the Canucks landed the plane against the Predators, but it wasn't like a smooth flight.
No. It was a rocky series.
There was definitely some stress and some stressful moments where it absolutely could have pivoted. Canucks win 4-1 goal games. Did they score 13 goals in the entire series? Right? Meanwhile, how much gap is there between the Kings and the Predators? Because going into the first round, Canucks fans were like breathing a sigh of relief that they ducked the Kings and were convinced that the Preds were a tougher out. I didn't agree with that.
Were an easier out.
What did I say?
Tougher.
Man, I'm really on my game.
You're firing on all cylinders.
Killing it right now. Do you watch the Tom Brady roast yesterday?
I did not. No, I've seen clips.
Bill Belichick got up to the podium and said, "What's up?" And I immediately started laughing.
Baby.
I was like, Bill and Jamie, both in touch with the culture.
Yeah, we're setting a winning culture here at Canucks Talk.
Sorry, I don't know why I just like blasted you to just distract from
Are you kidding me?
Misspeaking.
Best NFL coach of all time says what's up. Let's go.
I'm a big Belichick fan. Anyway, I think one of the things coloring it is that we saw Edmonton like pull apart mercilessly a team that's probably the same quality or thereabouts as the Predators. Your mileage can vary one way or another. I think Canucks fans think the Kings are better than the Preds. I kind of think the Preds are better than the Kings, but it's shades. It's degrees. It's not.
They're same tier. Probably.
They're definitely the same weight class.
Yeah.
And then your mileage may vary. And I also think that's part of what's coloring it, right? The Demko absence plus that, I think, is why you're seeing such lopsided lines, such lopsided projections from the leading public models. And, you know, I think that's worth noting. Like, we're coming out of this series, and the Canucks were victorious, and it was awesome on Friday to see Pew Suter score and to see those celebrations from Canucks players. You could tell it meant a lot to them. A lot of players talking about, you know, we've had some bad years here, and this is amazing. This is what we wanted. You could sense that relief. You could sense that feeling of accomplishment from players, if not from Canucks management.
What a shot. What a legendary shot.
So good. I love how nonplussed they are. Anyway, you know, for all of that, and for all that we should be celebrating this team advancing because it's awesome and it sets up a really cool series, you know, I am coming out with some concerns about things like, hey, like that looked kind of like a one-line team in that series. Are they going to be able to score enough to press the advantages that I think Canucks fans probably going into the series are feeling most comfortable with? Like Cody Ceci in the top four and Stuart Skinner, who's that? You know, like those sorts of edges. If you're going to make them hold up, you got to generate an awful lot more than they were generating against the Nashville Predators. Even if you ideally want to see this team muddy up the series. So it's sort of interesting to think about. Canucks advanced. It was cool. Their defense was incredible. And they came up clutch. They looked comfortable in like the toughest sort of gut check moments of that series. Great. That's a huge learning experience for this group. But I think we all know that they're going to have to play at a totally different level to upset the Oilers. And we'll get into it more. But I think there's a path for them to do that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more certainly as the show goes on and as the week goes on. You know, we've got a couple of shows to look forward to before the series gets going on Wednesday night. And just, you know, to your point about the celebrations and getting through that series against Nashville and how much it meant for the players, obviously for the fans. I mean, we talked about it going into Game 6, right, and going into a potential Game 7 on our show on Friday. We didn't know how Game 6 was going to turn out. They kind of needed to win that series to cement some of the positive memories from this season, right? Whether it's Rick Tocchet potentially winning the Jack Adams, Quinn Hughes and the Norris, you know, the incredible regular season they had and the point total, winning the Pacific Division, and even the moments within that series, right? The Game 4 comeback. If you lose in seven games, then it's a bittersweet at best memory, right? And I think now you have those moments. They are positive almost no matter what happens. Now, look, I'm not saying they should just be happy to be here against Edmonton or anything
like that.
Well,
I don't think they are.
No, obviously they're not. I'm not saying like, oh, hey, whatever, you know, season's already a success. They should be trying to go on a long run. That should be the standard. But that win, just that first round series win feels...
The validation angle.
Exactly.
I don't buy it.
It feels like a tipping point between...
You know I disagree with you.
Anticlimactic and, okay, we've accomplished something now.
You know I disagree with you. That's what there's a reason why the management wasn't celebrating.
The players were, though, and of course they were.
Well, yeah,
it means something.
Of course. It's awesome. It's a massive accomplishment, but I just don't think so's winning the Pacific Division, so's making the playoffs, so's shocking the world with your form throughout this season. Like, I just don't buy that beating a Nashville Predators team that, you know, they're fine, but they're not, it's not like they beat Vegas or Dallas or something. You know what I mean? It's not like we're going to look at that series and be like, and the Canucks are close to being at an inner circle contending caliber team. Like, I think that test comes this round.
I just think a loss completely changes how we view the season. Completely changes how we view the season.
Yeah.
In a way that a loss against the Oilers, barring like worst case scenario stuff, doesn't.
Well, you know me, I'm too stubborn to change my mind, and I was already saying that I thought this season was a screaming success.
Yeah.
So
This is like the hottest sports radio debate where I'm like, now the season is a success. And you're like, no, it already was. Two really spicy takes.
And people are like, Trent's so negative. Yeah. No, but because for me, the question now is not, the question's evaluative. And again, we'll get into this more. But the question is a big picture one now, right? Because there's a big picture one, and then there's the right in front of you 12 wins away from the Stanley Cup question, right? Obviously, as you get closer and closer to that, right, you're answering some questions. But in a world where, you know, you're the most probable outcome remains that you're not winning the cup this season, I think the question that we're all going to be asking ourselves on the other side of this is like, how close were the Canucks to measuring up to those teams? And like, Nashville doesn't give us that answer.
Oh, for sure.
Right? So I think that's, and then, so there's sort of, they're closer to the ultimate short-term goal, but they haven't answered the big picture question we sort of still, I think, fairly can ask. This series, however, is going to answer that question.
All right, we got to whip through some other features here on the whiteboard. So on the broadsheet, obviously there's going to be a lot of talk about Thatcher Demko's status in this series. Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts today saying, I don't know that we're going to see Demko in this series, but he also goes on to add, weird things happen in the playoffs, players push themselves. Rick Dhaliwal on Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV saying, he's hearing don't rule Thatcher Demko out for later in the series. They're going to see how he feels, still saying, using that week-to-week language, but does say some feel there's hope for a late return in this series. Also, interesting note from Rick Dhaliwal saying it wouldn't surprise him if the Canucks take a good run at signing Elias Lindholm. They'll try to figure out how they can retain him, which I thought was interesting because I'd been kind of working under the assumption that that was not going to happen. And he's not saying it's going to, just that they're going to look at it. But interesting note there from Rick Dhaliwal for the broadsheet. Lineup notes, Canucks are practicing right now at UBC. Just saw the line tweet from Batch, and no surprise. No changes from what we've been seeing in the playoffs so far from Rick Tocchet. So still Pettersson with Hoglander and Mikheyev, Miller, Suter, and Besser, Lindholm, Joshua Garland, Teddy Bluger, Phil DiGiuseppe, and Sam Lafferty.
And let's just go over it really quick, because the way the Canucks are playing, are actually deploying their lines, does not match necessarily the line
how
rushes,
they're skating.
Right? So Vancouver's top liners in that first round series were Besser, Miller, and this is based on 5-on-5 mm-hmm. ice time. Besser, Miller, and Lindholm. That's Vancouver's top line deployment guys at the moment. The second line deployment guys, Garland, Joshua, and Pettersson. Okay? Third line deployment guys, Suter, Bluger, and Mikheyev. And then Hoglander, Lafferty, PDG. That's sort of one thing to keep in mind, is like, Pettersson's playing up with the top line, which means that Suter, despite taking rushes on what we consider to be the top line,
mm-hmm.
is actually getting third line deployment. And Bluger, even though he's in the fourth line role, is really getting third line deployment, in part because they're really not using Nils Hoglander.
Yep.
I was also surprised that by the time the series ended, PDG had played more than Lafferty.
5-on-5. He did get, because Suter had to miss a couple shifts, right? So he got some shifts up with the Miller line.
Lafferty started the series in the top six.
That's a good point. Just for one game.
Yeah. But I mean, that was a big opportunity.
But yeah,
right?
Hoglander and Lafferty, very limited usage in this in this series in general.
Yeah, and Phil DiGiuseppe, which, you know, is going to have echoes here in the Edmonton series, I think, in a variety of ways. Most nominally, that ideally when you bump into the Oilers, you want to be able to say, well, after McDavid, do they have enough depth? But right now, Vancouver looks a lot more top-heavy, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, playoff forecast. So I'm sure many of our listeners have seen this already, but our guy, Dom Lucision's model at The Athletic, has the Canucks as serious underdogs in line with the betting markets, which we'll get to in a second, giving the Oilers a 76% chance to win the series, of course, corresponding to a 24% chance for the Canucks to win this series. And all I have to say on this is embrace the underdog status. Like Rick Tocchet talked about it yesterday, right? What's wrong with being the underdog? He likes that. It can be a positive thing. Use that as a mental advantage. And I think even for fans, just embrace that underdog status. Let it take some of the pressure off. It's okay. There's plenty of reasons why, you know, models and predictions and betting markets are giving the Oilers such a strong chance to win. It doesn't mean the Canucks are dead in the water. It doesn't mean they have no chance. Just embrace it. Embrace wearing the underdog label for this series. Betting odds.
So the to win series, like we discussed, Canucks plus 220, Oilers minus 270. That's about a 70-30. So pretty much in line.
Yep.
Although the model is like 4% more confident in an Oilers victory. And I want to get specifically into why. Maybe segment three. So about noon, we'll get into five. I've built a list of five reasons that the Canucks can win this series. And I want to touch on that at length there, why the model is so low. Series spread, always an interesting one. The Oilers are minus 155. So that's like 54 or 55% implied probability to win the series by more than a game and a half.
Mm.
So that's six or, you know,
and
under.
I think, there's probably a lot of Oilers and six picks floating out there, right? Like Oilers to win on home ice in game six. So you can understand the attraction to that 1.5 game spread the Oilers.
And if you look at like series exact length, right? Edmonton in six is the betting, like
the most
shortest
popular
odds.
Pick.
The shortest odds, but it's very, very much neck and neck. It's like plus 325 and plus 350. Plus 350 being Oilers in five. So
right there.
So right there. So there's a fair degree of market confidence that the Oilers should be graded as like the higher true talent team. But as we know, higher true talent teams don't always advance.
All right, that's the whiteboard for today. We will check in with the Oilers' perspective on this, or at least the Edmonton perspective. Zach Lang from Oilers Nation will join us next. Keep your texts coming in. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.